The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul. Yes, it does. Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa and my partner, Wynn Carpenter.
Yes.
How are you, sir?
Doing well. How about you? Happy New Year. We're back here first time for the new year, 2023, and we're moving forward. Hopefully, we won't have any more hiccups like we've had since 2019, I guess. The end of 2019 when they started poisoning us.
It is a new year.
It is a new year.
And we are broadcasting live from KCNR Studios, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM, your talk radio.
Yes, yes,
streaming
yes.
Live at KCNR1460.com. And we archive forever.
And ever. And ever. And ever. Ever. And ever. Oh, and you can also hear our podcast on Mountaintop Media. So check that out, too. MountaintopMedia.com. You can go to Jefferson State of Mind Podcast and see what... what's been going on there?
We'll be doing a special one on Mountaintop Media. It'll be out Wednesday on Facebook, Rumble, you name it. And it will be out. We will be interviewing the two new supervisors of Shasta County, Kevin Cry for District 1, and, of course, Chris Kellstrom for District 5.
Yep.
We have two guests in here.
We do.
I'm very happy to bring in.
Ditto.
And just two people that are a real power couple and amazing on what they've done. Excited to have Arthur Gorman and his beautiful wife, Katie. How you two doing?
Doing good.
Doing
Thanks
great.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you just got elected, huh, buddy?
Yeah.
Well, tell us about it.
Yeah, it was really fun. We had a great campaign. You can see all my videos I made that my wife really enjoys.
Nope.
Lots of slapstick. My favorite movie, of course, is Distinguished Gentleman. It taught me all the ways of campaigning.
I love it.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, you know, the people really spoke. I think I won by 2,000 or 3,000 votes over an incumbent.
Yep.
And we knocked one of the other incumbents out that had been there for, 17 years or something. The other incumbent's been there for over 20 years, so we just need some new blood. In 2 years, we're having another election, so we need a recruit.
Yep.
People to run, two for Area 2 and one for Area 1, so we can take over the board. And then once we can take over the board, we have a lot of power.
What is the jurisdiction of the board?
Well, the jurisdiction of the board has some very interesting things. We set the pay scale for the county superintendent. We just gave her, I think, a $30,000 raise.
Yeah,
$30,000 a year?
A year raise, yeah. Well, she deserves it, they say. And
holy expletive.
And I don't think anybody else in the county got a $30,000 raise.
Well, 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago, Kathy Darling Allen got a $49,000 a year raise.
Yeah. So
ROV, yes.
They did this analysis, and she is the highest paid elected superintendent or hired superintendent in the northern counties.
Northern counties. Is that from Sacramento North or
yeah.
is that from Tehama North?
Yeah. It's Sacramento North.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So whether they're appointed, hired, or elected.
So out of approximately 20 counties-ish,
yeah,
she's the highest paid.
Yeah, she was the highest paid before we gave her the raise.
And oh, now she really is.
Yeah.
You just locked it in.
Yeah. So
when did you guys vote this raise in?
The last one. So I said, hey, you know, what is this based off of? And they said, well, you know, if she was an employee, she would have got a 9% increase. And she became an elected official, so she never got her 9% increase. So they gave her an 8% COLA and a 9% increase. And it's all in the
oh
minutes. I was like, okay. So I said, well, the next person that gets voted in, do they get that same pay? And they said, well, it's based off of experience, and you guys have to vote it in. They said, next meeting you could come in and say, we're cutting your pay in half. And he said, not that you do that, but you have the power to do that. That's one of the things that the county board is in charge of, setting the pay scale for the elected county superintendent.
So I'm assuming you voted no on that?
Well, that one, you have to pick the fights you want to pick, because I voted yes to move it forward, because we can always vote to chop it in half.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, well, the fight that we're fighting is more about the policies and the agendas. Mm-hmm. Because if, you know, my elected official got in, I still probably wouldn't have voted for a $30,000 pay raise.
Right.
Because we have other issues at the county as far as employees having to pay for insurance that they already have through the VA, through their spouse, through the tribe, that they're having to pay out of pocket for insurance that they're already covered for. And
they don't need.
And they can't opt out.
Wow.
So you're talking about having to pay, like, you know, $200 to $600 a month for insurance they already have.
Wow.
That's unacceptable.
And the county board doesn't have the ability to override that, only the county superintendent, because she's an elected official.
So she can override that on behalf of all those staff members?
Yeah, because it's part of a bargaining agreement.
Okay.
We do have a caller on the line. Charles, do you have a question?
Hi, Terry. I don't know if you remember me. You interviewed me back in 2019 outside the courthouse in Sacramento when Mark Baird had his first preliminary injunction hearing.
Okay.
That was postponed.
Was that the one that was about the Second Amendment?
Yeah, the Mark Baird's lawsuit.
Yeah, well, the newest one. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm the first person, actually, to challenge California's ban on openly carrying loaded firearms.
Well, Charles, with all due respect, we've got some guests on, and we're talking about the school system. So if you're going into the Second Amendment, that's great. Maybe just if you have any, we'll have to take that up on another show. I have guests here, and we're talking about Shasta County Board of Education and our school boards and what's going on with the pronoun situation that we have
now.
So we're kind of on that venue, but this is great. And if you want to call about 10 o'clock, I can take your call real quick on another line. They'll switch me over. I can go ahead and get your number or leave your number with Liam, and then I'll call you back.
Okay. Well, great. Let's do that. I'll leave my number.
Thank you, Charles. Okay. So getting back to the school board and what exactly you can do for school boards to help them with this new pronoun situation. I'd like you to explain that. Apparently there was it went to court, and that was I believe his name was Nicholas Merriweather,
right,
who was the teacher that brought this whole thing forward about the pronouns. He apparently called a student who in college, I think it was Shawnee College in Ohio, and he apparently had called a person who thought that they were a woman, sir, thank you, sir, for the question, and got into all kinds of trouble. Can you go into the pronoun kind of thing we're dealing with here?
Right.
As far as the county goes.
So that's another part of the board, is to approve the policies for employees, even though we aren't in charge of the bargaining agreement. Mm-hmm. We are in charge of policies that they carry out within their jurisdiction. So they have several charter schools. They have some early childhood education. We're in charge of juvenile detention education here in the county, and continuation schools. So there's a lot of children that get affected by the policies that we pass, and a lot of employees. I think there's over 300 employees that get affected by policies that we vote on. So one of the policies that they put forth with the federal government is sending out these messages. It wasn't voted by legislation, but it was established as guidelines. So they're putting it in as if you're a transgender, you're a protected class.
Okay.
Under Title IX, which Title IX was originally for, you know, females.
Yeah.
To have equal representation.
I thought it was about employment. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Kind of ironic.
So they're sliding this in, and they're saying that if you do not affirm someone's gender identity, then that's harassment. They're putting it in the harassment policy. So when they sent that forth to me, I said, oh, okay, let's reexamine this, because I've seen things in the news. I've read court cases. There was one in Ohio where a teacher won $95,000.
Yeah, Merriweather.
I mean, Yeah. The Ohio one was the professor. He won $400,000.
Right.
There was another one in Oklahoma where she won $95,000. In the end of December, there was another one in Florida where they just won theirs. So the sister district court in Ohio, federal court in Ohio,
right,
already set precedent.
Right.
Oklahoma, I think they settled out of court, so they didn't set precedent. But the one in Florida set precedent again, and there's two other ones with Alliance Defending Freedom. So my ask was that we take down this policy and revisit it, add what the court had put forth as far as they said it was compelled speech. It broke the First Amendment, and so it was a violation of the First Amendment. Then they said it was a violation of the 14th Amendment.
Right.
Then it was a violation of the Civil Rights Act. So, but they're really winning on the fact that it's forced compelled speech. So the government can't tell you what to say and what to believe. And that's it. And so, you know, it's against the law to do that to somebody.
And what was their conclusion on?
So what they said was it was written very well. And I said, well, you know, I'm really concerned because how does this affect the staff?
Yeah.
So the assistant superintendent said that it would be progressive discipline. I said, well, please explain to me, because at my work, progressive discipline means one thing. So can you explain the process? They said, well, we would give them a re-education.
Uh-huh.
So they're going to re-educate the staff to affirm someone's gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't reaffirm, then they will give them a written, and then finally it will end in termination.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I'm trying to avoid all that.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, we're going to end up in a lawsuit. And they said, well, don't worry. Assistant superintendent said, we have a $50 million insurance policy per occurrence. And we have $1,000 that we have to pay for legal fees an hour. So, you know, if it does go to a court case, you know, we're covered. I said, well, I'm trying to avoid that too. I said, so let's pull it down, revisit it, just add the language about the First Amendment violation, the 14th Amendment violation. I said, not everybody's going to be happy. I know that you need to pass this harassment thing because you're worried that the federal government is going to cut your funding, and that's what they're worried about. They said, well, if we don't follow what this harassment policy or sexual harassment policy that we're trying to put forth, then the government will cut our funding. And I said, no, they won't. They didn't cut it when it came to the COVID mandates. They still gave everybody a double allocation of funds with the ESSER funds. So you don't have to follow that. And they said, it's the law. I said, well, it's not voted in by the people. And the legislature didn't vote it in, so it's not a law, and you don't have to follow it.
So, okay, with all that, re-education. So re-educating on that part of the process, who's going to be re-educating them, and where's their certification and background to be qualified to re-educate the educators about speaking to the children?
They're treating this like it's an HR issue having to do with sexual harassment. So in the same way that if an employee were to, you know, have allegations against them as far as sexual harassment goes, mm-hmm. They would do the same exact protocols with that. So they would be pulled into HR and then talk to that person about, you know, how important it is to respect people's pronouns, yada, yada, yada. By HR, yes.
Okay. All right.
Well, you know, I find that really interesting because it was federal court, and I know that you had talked about, you know, I had read about the case of Shawnee College. Mm-hmm. I read about that one and in Ohio, and I find it interesting that really and truly, there was a monetary settlement, of course,
mm-hmm.
but the reason that could be a monetary settlement had to fall under Title 42, 1983 of the United States Code because their constitutional rights were violated.
Right.
So I'm sure that's where it went to in federal court. But here's my question, and there's a lot of us that do plan on attending that meeting. It's at 1:30, and I know that some people have written some things out they're going to speak about, but really and truly, if, in fact, the board holds true in their stretch of this being sexual harassment rather than limiting free speech, that is a felony. That's Title 18, Code Section 242, because as a school board oversight group, which is really what you are, that particular situation is violating their First Amendment right and their 14th Amendment right. Therefore, it's a felony because under the color of law, the board is using their power to say, we can go ahead and we can remove you from this job. We can fire you if, even though we're violating your constitutionally protected right. That's a felony.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if anybody hit them up with that. I would imagine my friend Rich Gallardo probably already did. But I would imagine somebody needs to hit him up with that, or you hit him up with that, Arthur. You did, yes?
Well, I didn't go into the fact that it was a felony.
It's just a felony.
Yeah.
10 years imprisonment. So really and truly, I think that they need to be aware, because – and then they can be civilly sued individually under Title 42, Code Section 1983 of the United States Code. They can be sued individually.
Wow.
And I don't think and that's part of the problem we have, and why there's been such a great revival of liberty in our counties and in our country, because people are saying, wait a second, I don't want to go to court. You're breaking the law. Right. You're a criminal. What say you guys?
Well, and also, too, on top of that, the attorneys that represent these entities, whether it's a school board or anything else, they're ignorant to the law. Even though they're attorneys – you know, they passed all the tests. They paid for a bar and passed that. But they're ignorant to actually what's really painful to the said agencies that are going to have to pay through the nose, i.e., we, the taxpayers.
Well, I would go so far as to say it wasn't even just that they were negligent on the law. They misrepresented it in that meeting, and it's in the minutes. And we were able to send the minutes to a lawyer that's a friendly of ours. And they are helping us to draft a letter, not only against that attorney who misrepresented the law, which is not okay, to that board, made them think that that was a law, and that if they did not go along with that policy, that all the things that Terry was saying was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, obviously, we're learning that it's the opposite of that. And they also said that they have liability insurance. And so it's fine if they're sued by these employees that will get fired for standing up for their own beliefs.
That's why breaking the law is better.
Well, then
that's what they said.
Yeah.
He literally said it doesn't matter, because the liability insurance will look to see if you have adopted the policies that are put through by the California School Board Association. And if you haven't put those policies in place, then the liability insurance will not cover you for those lawsuits that the students may make, because they're, you know, making up their genders any given moment. And so they basically scared the 6 board members into taking on that policy. And the saddest part is that we have a friend who's incredible at doing all this research, and she looked up Shasta Union High School District has this policy. Anderson High School has this policy. If you have a child in these school districts, they have these policies. Gateway has this policy. So I will say that there was one of the school districts, and I want to say that it was Gateway, had theirs a little bit more watered down. Like, they had not just pulled the policy, you know, verbatim. They had made a little change here and there, but no matter what, it's taking parents' rights away. Your child can go to school and be a different gender, and no teacher and nobody will tell them. In fact, they will even go so far as changing their official records to state that gender that they're choosing to be. The whole time they're at school, they can use those restrooms, those locker rooms, all of that, and the teachers are required to use those pronouns. For me, you know, we're going on that legality of protecting those teachers who, you know, like me, who I'm not going to get into a person's delusion, but I'm also thinking about these children and the rift that they're causing between these parents and these kids, and undermining the parents every single day.
Reiterate, well, how it would seem to me like if this was the policy, this was what the kid was going to school saying, you know, I feel like Joanne, not Joe, that the parents are complicit with that.
No.
Okay, well, if they're not complicit with it.
Not always, and that's the thing.
Those parents, because they have jurisdiction over their children, Oh, they don't have jurisdiction. Through the law, they don't?
No, so on this...
Well, through the law.
According to these policies...
Not law, but go ahead.
Right, not law, but it, right. But it is... Right. There is an ed code that is actually behind some of this. So specifically this one. They made it to where that official record. So the way that it used to be was, okay, well, we go by the official records of the child. So the official records would need to be changed. Well, now they made it to where those official records, and Arthur, you'll have to help me with this, but those official records now can be sealed. And it doesn't say what the original gender of that student is. And that has the parents are not allowed to be part of that process at all.
Okay, well, who seals the records
the school.
Of your children? Okay, they can seal the records only in their, but the records aren't sealed. I mean, the birth certificate's the birth certificate.
Right.
So my point is that the records aren't sealed. They can, see, all the policies, this is a big deal.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a very big deal. Your child goes to school 6 hours a day, 5 days a week. That is a very big deal, what damage that can happen to your child, and it's whether you want it or you don't want it.
Well, no, but that's where you can go ahead and go after them legally. But Liam has a question. What you got there, buddy?
So I'm listening to you guys, and I'm thinking, and I hear you guys. I think it's important to look at things from another perspective, because while, like, you guys, I don't know if you have kids, I'm sure you guys
do. We all do.
Right? Yeah. I'm sure everyone here is a great parent, right? But as a parent, like, you want to be so involved in your kid's life. You want them to be able to come to you. But, like, there's kids who don't have good parents, right?
Right.
And so they can't come out to their parents and talk to them about what's going on, because they could get, like, beaten or, like terrible things. And so...
So in other words, you're saying, well, somebody has a different persuasion that they believe in, they couldn't tell mom or dad because they're afraid.
Because they're afraid, right? So I think, like, I understand, like the relationship between a school and parents and kids needs to be tight, but also, like, just as much as it's your job as a parent to protect your kids, it's also, like, the school's job to protect kids.
No, that's where you're wrong, is, you know, you need to know that that's a slippery slope. And these
schools, I do recognize that is.
Okay, well, these schools are really, really, really pushing their bounds. And what their job is and what their jurisdiction is to teach and educate these kids.
Okay.
And it needs to stick to that. And I get wanting to make an environment of safety for these kids, because that is – one of the ways that helps my students learn is if they come to school and they feel safe. And so that is a huge priority to me. But when we're talking about this huge slippery slope of getting into social issues and other things having to do with these kids' daily lives, then that is a huge amount of hubris on the part of the schools to say that that is their job to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because – see, that it's a difference of the thought process of again, freedom and liberty. The school is not there to socially become the parent or the guiding parent or the guiding light for the students that's there. It's not their jurisdiction, their role, or their job. And it's unconstitutional, everything she's saying. Reasonably, I understand what you're saying, and it's a shame that, I mean, it's a bummer. Let's face it. There's a lot of people that have bad parents. There's parents that don't really give a crap. There's parents that are on drugs. There's single parents that have issues, have been in and out of prison, but they're still parents, and they get their kids back. The deal is you're not going to fix society that way, and the schools have no jurisdiction in which to fix the society that way, or even should be given that mantle, because they're not equipped. It ain't their kids.
Yeah, and we have a six-hour day. I mean, these kids need to learn to read more than anything else.
Yeah, we always talk about, like, age-appropriate stuff or policies that could really implement change. And, like, this policy that they're putting forth is really a hindrance to the staff, because when you think about a working relationship of implementing this policy in the classroom, most of the time you have a class of, let's say, 15 to 30 kids, and all the kids come in, and Katie can help me with this, but say you have 15 to 30 kids come in, you just say, hey guys, break out your books, let's get to work, and then you get a call at the end of the day with a parent saying, you misgendered my student. Well, I just told everybody to get their workout. I wasn't trying to insult the student. I was just saying, let's get the workout and let's get going. I said, hey guys, let's go. Well, you just misgendered my student. So then you'd be re-educated, you know? So very simple things like this. And then the next time you say, hey guys, you slipped up. All right. Well, we're going to have to give you a write-up. Oh man. You know, it wasn't even that I was trying to offend somebody or do anything. I was just, you know, just talking. And then, hey guys, let's do this. And oh, well, you know, you could be terminated now because it was the same issue. This is how like union work. Like if you're a union worker and you do the same thing three times, you can be fired.
Right.
You know, it's funny because you hear a lot of people that scream about their freedom and liberty and their right to be this and their right to do that and why they should do this and how they should do that. And they want it. They want to be free, yet they want the school system and government to control what their kids do and think. Right. I mean, it's like there is no two sides to that story, I don't think. And the reason I don't think that is because it's not the role of government to raise our kids. It's not the role of government. If it is the role of government, you're talking about communism. You're talking about Nazism when they pulled all the kids away from their parents. I mean, really and truly, that just, you know, if we're going to be a society that believes in liberty and freedom, there's no room in there. And there are laws and a constitutional guarantee. I'll end it with this. You don't have constitutional rights. Because if you had rights through the Constitution, that means the Constitution is where you have to obey. We have God-given rights, and they're constitutionally protected. They're guaranteed through the Constitution.
Well, also, too, like going back a little bit, my children were raised to address adults as Mr., Miss., or Mrs. That's how they were raised. They went to school, and to the private school they went to, they required that as well. But my children were raised that way before they even got to school age. So that's how they do it. They still, to this day, they're in their 20s, still address the family friends that we have by Mr. and Mrs. or Miss, depending on the situation there. Those are the three addresses or labels that we have taught them, and they embrace those, and the people that they are speaking to embrace that and honor that as well. So we know exactly who they're talking about, what they're talking or what they're talking about, man or woman, and so there's no confusion there, zero confusion. But that was our family. That's how our family raised the kids. And in school, I know when I was growing up, I had teachers, men and women alike, saying, ladies and gentlemen, sit down and be quiet. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do this. They always addressed it with a two-gender phrase, if you will. And my kids, when they went to the school, even into the schools up until a couple years ago when they graduated, same thing. They had teachers that did the same thing. Ladies and gentlemen, sit down and be quiet. Whatever. You know, they had that. So why is this all of a sudden an issue? And why are we wasting all this time, money, effort, and energy, frustration, and not doing the real work that needs to be done by addressing this? I don't get it. I'm sorry. I do not get it. How we've been derailed so badly. I don't understand that.
Yeah, it is kind of shocking to watch. I have to say I agree with you on that. And the amount of time spent on this, because it is so loosey-goosey written, and which I really have to respect Arthur for saying, look, we need to button this up. We need to have more of grounds to this policy because, you know, this seems very out there. We have no way of knowing, you know, what we're supposed to do as teachers or not do. It's allowing the full control with the student. And, you know, if anybody's ever taught eighth grade, you know that these kids really love to mess with their teachers. I mean, mm-hmm. One second to the next, they have all the control to be able to do that.
It's the rite of passage.
Absolutely. I mean, it's their right. Yes.
Yep.
But I have to say that this is very concerning, and a lot of teachers that I know in, you know, whether they're on the side of, you know, pronouns or on the other side of no pronouns, they are nervous about this because, you know, it already is stressful enough to not, like, try to have the conversation, like, what are your pronouns, all the way down to what is it at this given moment, to the point where they're trying to say, okay, I'm only using the students' names now. I'm not using pronouns in my classroom. I'm just saying their names. Well, they're changing their names, you know, because obviously they have a girl name they're born with, you know, parents gave them, and now they're coming to school with their boy name. You know, it's same category. So they're very stressed out about this situation. So that is a huge issue. It's taking time, energy out of our administrators that need to actually be spending their time supporting teachers so that the learning can happen.
So where does the counseling come in? Where is the – schools have counselors, right, or districts have counselors. Where does that come in to factor in to help those students who are going that direction? How is counseling not being addressed with that? How are we letting these kids fall through the huge crevice of this stuff happening? How is this happening? It needs to be addressed. The counselors need to get on board. We need to have a team of counselors that address all these issues so that that can happen there, off to the side, dealing with those issues, not forcing students and staff to have to address this and gobble up all the time and not get the real work done by the school district board and all the staff members.
Katie, before we do this, we are not breaking, Liam. This is too important of a conversation to have, so we are not going to have a break. Anyway, go ahead and answer Wynn's question.
Well, I think that it's really, as he's talking, I'm thinking, man, that would be really great if our counselors actually really got down to the point where they realize that this is a psychological problem that these kids are having, and they're being pulled into it by their peers. And social media and different things involved. And we could actually help them through that to love themselves for who they are and how they were born. But these counselors are not always, you know, I know some really great ones, so I'll say that right now. There's amazing ones out there. Mm-hmm. But there's some that would actually encourage this behavior, which leads to kids having more suicidal thoughts and all kinds of things that cause our youth to have problems because they're unhappy with themselves, and that's what it comes down to.
Right,
they're trying to fit in.
And that's why I question that, because they need help in some capacity. I don't know what that is, but if they need some help just to talk to somebody or just have somebody hold their hand and reassure them everything's going to be okay and walk them through that, or find out what's really going on behind the scenes to get that addressed, whatever that might be, those are the things that need to be addressed first and foremost, and then everything else can be dealt with.
What I'm saying is that as a parent, I would be very scared that if I had a gender-confused student, my child was gender-confused, to go to just any counselor, because this could get a lot worse and they could be encouraged in that behavior.
Well, absolutely.
It would lead to more psychological problems.
Here's the thing. Again, it all goes back to the parents. And mm-hmm. you'd mentioned earlier on that there's a lot of parents that don't know that their kids are doing this at school.
Correct.
Okay. So when those parents find out that this is going on in school, where is that contingent of parents that should be outraged and also maybe should be, to Liam's point, go to a position of saying, okay, mom, dad, this is what I feel. This is what I feel like I am. And then the parent is going to go, okay, well, let's talk about that. Now, I know that's a stretch because a lot of parents won't go there, and I understand that some parents would just be, you know. Uh-huh. But the point is that it always goes back to the parents. Getting back to the real issue here, the jurisdiction of the school has to be questioned.
Correct.
The jurisdiction of the board has to be questioned.
That's right.
And they are committing felonies, and I'm saying it right here on the air. They are committing felonies. This is a violation of their oath of office. It's a violation of Article 20 in the Constitution, Title 18, 242. And if they're doing this in the school to these parents as an individual, it's Title 18, 241. Now, we do have Stones on the phone. Stones, what say you?
Hey, good morning. Two quick points. The first point is, you know, the SCOE, they do early education, special education, the juvenile delinquent education. So I don't know if those schools within SCOE have the parent-teacher associations. I do not know. That's something we can look for to try to get in contact with the parents of all of these kids through those associations if they exist, because I guarantee you the vast majority of the SCOE parents have no idea what's going on with this policy, a vast majority of them. And then the second issue is the lawyer, the attorney at the SCOE meeting in December. All he said was, we are following the law. And, yes, there is a state law that says, you know, this gender identity stuff shall be in the schools. And that's unfortunate that this attorney, he's just a conduit. He's a conduit for the evil state that we live in. And, you know, they're not rejecting a bad law. They should be rejecting and peacefully non-complying with this bad law. And whoever this attorney is needs to be fired, because he is also ignoring, or he is ignorant of, the Supreme Court opinions on compelled speech. So, you know, author can't fire this attorney by himself, of course, but this attorney needs to go. Anyways, that's all I have.
All right, buddy. Thank you very much. So, author, what, you know, off of what Stones had said, and I, you know, I can, made some sense, but again, it's a matter of non-compliance. I mean, I think we're at a point in our country, and especially in a lot of the counties in California, that the parents, I think, should be involved in all this. And frankly, if you're listening to this program, anybody that's listening to this program, you need to go to KCNR1460.com. Go to the archive and share it for this program, Jefferson State of Mind. It's usually 10 minutes. Within 10 minutes, we're archived.
Yep.
So you need to share this. I mean, you need to share this and make the people, a lot of parents who aren't aware. And we're talking about a situation that is just dire to our society, to our country. And a lot of people have always said, hey, it really starts with the kids. Well, I have two wonderful people right here, right now, that are saying, yeah, we care about the kids. Author, you're an RN, correct?
Correct.
And you're running for
Shasta County Board of Education
because you saw a need, not only for your own children, but you saw, and your children go to a private school?
Correct.
Okay, so that's the heart that this man has and that Katie has in the idea of, this is for all the kids. We need people to step up and do that. Katie, what say you?
Well, I was just thinking about what you just said, Terry, about, you know, whether this is law or not. Well, in speaking with the lawyer that we're dealing with, Tracy Henderson.
Yes.
I'm just going to read what she wrote us. She said, I'm working on a letter for your Board of Education and their lawyer. So far, my research confirms for me that there has to be severe and persuasive conduct that arises to the level that a court would find an act actual discrimination. The lawyer misconstrues the law. Okay, so we have that as a fact. I also think that you cannot make a policy that violates the law. And then she says that she's going to give us a letter that outlines the misconduct of that board. Then she says that it cannot be a basis for employee discipline or discrimination. And then we were able to send her the minutes that showed what the lawyer actually did say. And she wrote us back later on and said that it is what he said was absolutely not true. So what Stones was saying was absolutely correct. But what they did was they made transgender a protective class under Title IX.
Right.
So that in that way, that is the only thing that they did that was like official in law. And then from there, CB...
California School Board Association.
Yes. California School Board Association goes and makes these policies and disseminates it out. And then the lawyer sits there with a proverbial gun to the board's head and
right.
says, it's law. So the big stretch on it was that it did, number one, yes, an employee can be disciplined for sexual harassment, for not using the right pronouns. Parents' rights were averted in this policy, and then students can use the restrooms or locker rooms of their gender. So it's a lot in that policy. So they took one thing that happened that was quote-unquote law and then turned around and wrote this policy, which was misrepresentation that saying that all of this was law, which it's not. So.
Now, when did Tracy send you this?
Yesterday.
Excellent. Okay, so.
Okay, we have a caller on the line, so let's get to the caller.
Dolores.
Dolores, how you doing?
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. I'm listening to Katie was reading the letter. Sounds like they committed fraud. You know, just by saying what they wrote. You know, I mean, you know, the lawyer, but not the lawyers representing them, but the other lawyer, the school board. But anyways, I was going to say, I hope that, you know, everybody got a copy of how to overturn the vote on the school board, what they voted on this, you know, item. And that we can do it if we could get enough people involved in overturn this decision and parents hear about it, believe me, that room will be packed. But I'm sure there's a lot of parents that don't know what's going on. I met somebody at the Home Depot, and I explained to them about what's going on, and I sent her an email. She was upset. She said she's going to pass it on to parents. We need to get the information out to more parents. So I'm going to print out a lot of flyers. I want to carry them. I want to go door to door and pass them out because this is very important. We need parents there at the meeting.
Amen. Thanks, Dolores.
We need to overturn this vote, though. We absolutely need. That's the only way to do it, to overturn the vote.
There we go. And the board can always go back and revisit past issues. They can always go back. They're the governing body of the board.
If they're willing.
Right. They can go back to issues and say, you know what, second thought, we're going to go back and revisit this issue and go through it, and they can overturn it themselves if they so choose. So those are the kind of things that need to happen, and people have to be aware that they can do that. Even the sitting board members have to know that just because they said it, yes, confirmed it one day, doesn't mean that they can't go back and fix it the next day. Of course they can. They can always do that.
Are they willing? Do you think that the mood of the board is willing to do that?
So I already asked, and they said no.
That's what I kind of knew that because you told me that.
Yeah.
Wow. So the thing is that they've already said no. Again, it's one of those things where we can maybe revisit something or look at something, but it's really time to play hardball. No question about it.
And that's why we need
to run against them.
Well, the thing is that
we need to run against them. Right.
The chair of the county or whether the head of the city council, the same thing with the school board. The person that says no is the president of the school board. So
who's that?
That one is Kathy. Let's get her name up here, but, so the president of the school board sets the agenda with the superintendent, and they choose what goes on there or wasn't. So I asked at this board meeting to bring it back so that we could vote on it and revisit. And this is Kathy Berry. She was the vice president last year. She's the president this year.
So Kathy Berry?
So a sitting board member.
Kathy with a K.
A sitting board member can't request for something to be on the agenda?
So we can request, which I did.
But she'll deny it.
And she can deny.
That's wrong.
Yeah.
You all have equal vote on that.
Right.
You were elected by your constituents to be on there.
So I request.
That needs to be changed immediately.
I requested it before, you know, you have X amount of days to request it to get on the agenda, and it was denied.
And you were within that window?
Yeah. And so they can choose to revisit it or not.
So that's the problem. They've got the control right down to one or two people, the superintendent and the chair.
So I told them I'm going to bring it up again at the meeting because it would be a Brown Act violation for me to email everybody on the board to say, hey, can we bring this back? But it's not a Brown Act violation to do it at the board meeting. So I'll be doing that at the board meeting too.
Okay. And the public needs to know about that too. So when the public gets up there to speak, they can address it as well.
Right.
Absolutely. That's unacceptable. They need to change that policy or practice. Is it a policy? Is it in?
It's a policy.
Is it in bylaws written in some format of some sort?
So, yes.
It is.
Yeah.
They need to address their bylaws. We should all have a copy of the bylaws so we can see what it looks like. That should be out there with the public because it is a public entity. So we need to see the bylaws so that we can help you guys redline some of those things and fix them.
That'd be awesome.
Believe me, we're going through some bylaws right now that are totally jacked up and we're fixing
Who's
them.
Who's we? Mm-hmm.
Well, just a bunch of people.
We the people.
Some patriots.
He doesn't want to tell us.
Some patriots.
Yeah, it's happening all over the county is really what we need to do is we need to go through this stuff and give the elected officials their power back and make sure that the power is more disseminated across the county.
One thing, we just had a phone call. Whoever called in here, please call back again. Liam is is back from pouring coffee.
Yeah.
It's Siskiyou Steve.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Good job, Liam. Way to be on it, buddy. Siskiyou Steve, what's up?
Are you there, Steve?
Are you there, Steve?
Yeah, I'm here now. I hear you.
Oh, I can barely hear you.
We can't hear you.
We can't hear you. We can't hear you.
I understand they don't even say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Okay, Steve, can you hear us? Can you hear us? We can't. You want to just cut him off, and I'll just mention it over the air. Okay. Steve, when you called in, we couldn't hear a word you were saying, and apparently you couldn't hear us because we were trying to tell you to turn your phone up. So if you want to call back in, that's great. Anyway.
I heard a little bit of what he was saying. He was saying something about people not doing the flag salute at schools anymore.
Okay.
I can proudly say that a lot of schools in Shasta County make that one of the teachers' duties listed on their duties page, you know, in their MOU or their contracts.
Yep.
So we actually, a lot of schools in Shasta County, you can be proud that they actually do the flag salute every single morning. So that's part of the reason why Shasta County is a pretty wonderful place, so that you guys can feel good about that.
Good, good.
You know, again, it's more of awareness that we need to have with the parents. We need so much more awareness. That's why programs like this and with you two coming in and giving this information, there's a million people that don't know anything about this. In Shasta County, probably 90% of them don't. And we need to have people that understand the gravity of what's going on in our schools. So, Arthur, what are some of the solutions that you see? Give me about 2 minutes of the solutions you see that we can do to turn this board around. And then, Katie, give me 2 minutes. Go ahead, buddy.
Right. So the biggest thing we can do to change the board is people need to run. Is one. So three people ran for Shasta County Board of Education this last election cycle that they weren't even challenged. So they paid their $50 to file, and that was it. They didn't have to campaign.
Were they board members already?
They were board members already.
Incumbents, yep.
Incumbents. Okay. So all someone really needed to do was pay their filing fee down at the county, which is about $50,
and challenge them.
They didn't have to campaign, didn't have to run, just get their name on the ballot.
Right.
That was it. So that's the way that you can take back the school board, where you can implement new policies, revisit old policies, look at the budget, look at the salary of the superintendent, see how you can affect positive change within. We have a $24 million surplus at the county. We have to hold back about $3 million of it for rainy day fund just in case something bad happens. But, you know, we have $21 million to help out any other project here in Shasta County.
Oh, does that include inflated salaries?
Yeah. So they did say that they're going to put a portion into the pension funds of the employees because, you know, everybody knows pension funds are underfunded. So they're going to use some of that millions of dollars to go into the pension fund so they can actually afford the pensions they have already. But we don't know how many millions of dollars are going to go in there. But they did tell us within the minutes what would be appropriate. Then they're also projected to get $3 million of surplus because what they said is that California has restructured the way that they're going to fund schools, and they're going to legislate it into law that instead of kids coming to school and being rewarded for being in school and basing it on butts and seats and kids' attendance, you're going to be paid based off last year's enrollment, so you'll be fully funded. Every school will be fully funded. So every school district in Shasta County will have a surplus because they're going to have a lot more money. So with all that money, we were talking about learning loss that has happened within the last 2 years. Kids not getting to state standards of education. So we really have an ability to use those millions of dollars to get those kids to the state standard and beyond. We can get our kids, you know, we pay the most in California for education, yet we have some of the worst scores. I believe we're like over 40, which is a bad number, you know, because we're almost last in the nation for education, but we pay the most for education.
I think it's like $25 billion more than anybody else, something like that.
Right. So why aren't we getting the money? You know, on average, we pay $22,000 a year for a kid to go to school.
Wow. Holy cow.
Sometimes we pay more based on their need, but the average is $22,000. To go to private school in Shasta County, it's about $6,000.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you have a better product at a private school?
Yep.
for $6,000 when you're sending a kid to public school and the taxpayers are paying $22,000.
Yeah. Good question.
Okay, with that, Steve, you got about a minute. Sorry we couldn't hear you before, but you've got about a minute. Make it quick because we have to go to Katie. Go ahead.
Real quick, yeah. It's China-fornia now. It's not California anymore. That's okay. Why we have all the problems. And the other thing is it's one nation under God.
Right.
If we instill that back into the schools, the Pledge of Allegiance, the Star-Spangled Banner, there's people. I was watching a football game yesterday, and I couldn't believe that how many people weren't singing the song along with the guitar player, because probably they didn't even know the words anymore. You know, we don't hear it like we used to hear it everywhere we went.
Right.
And so, you know, those traditional values that we were grown with, that our country was founded with, we need to bring back into our schools. And so as long as we're confronting the school boards, which I'm involved in doing this up here, we need to also bring the solution, and that is God, traditions, values, morals, integrity. Thank you very much for your show, you guys. You're wonderful, and I try to tell everybody about it all the time.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Yeah, share this with people because it is about our kids. Katie, you got about 2 minutes here, kiddo.
Okay, well, the biggest thing is that whether you're a parent or you're not a parent, you need to be making time for these school board meetings. We need help. There's a group of us mama bears. We're trying to form together to do a Moms for Liberty group. When we do get out there and get that going, support us. Come to our events. Contribute with your money if you have some, or, you know, just roll up your sleeves and help us. We are going to get organized. We're going to be able to get information out to people as much as we can. And if you do have a child in school, remember that it is your right and your responsibility to show up to these school board meetings. Not just the contentious ones, the boring ones too, because there's a lot going on. There's a lot to it, and you need to get involved.
How do people get a hold of your organization, or has it even gotten started yet?
Yeah, we're gonna start pumping things out there probably in the next month or two.
So it's gonna be on social media.
We're in the process of being vetted by Moms of Liberty.
Okay.
And so
that's already an organization.
Can find us on there. Okay. We should be the Shasta chapter. So keep be looking out for that.
Okay.
We really, really need people to get involved. Don't just come out for the issues, because we're fighting things after they happen. We're finding out about things after they happen. For example, this we thought was just a SCOE problem. We're finding out this is all over Shasta County, this pronoun issue. So it's the only way that we can do this is strength in numbers. So we need people to get involved.
Amen.
Well, you guys, amazing stuff. Arthur, we have about a minute. You have anything you want to end up with?
Well, the big thing is, Steve was right, we need to get those values instilled, and we need people to run. We need people to run. There was over 100 school board positions available to run for here in Shasta County, and many of those were unchallenged.
Wow. Okay, well, with that, thank you, you two, for everything you do.
Yes.
You're amazing. And what we want to do is we'll talk about, once you get everything finalized with Mothers for Liberty, we're going to bring you on, and we'll go through that, the two of you. And God bless you both. You guys are amazing. Well, Wynn.
Yes.
You know.
The time has come.
Has it?
It has.
Are you sure?
Party's over.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Time has come.
All right.
For 51.
Amen.
Let's get it done.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? It's not our bill, we had no say. You don't serve us, you serve LA. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind. You don't know us, you have no clue. Still, you're telling us what to do.
It's time to start a brand new stage.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.